love this podcast? Head to patreon.com/DATC Media Company to find out how you can show your support. DATC Media is very excited to be a Nugs.net official affiliate. Never miss the show. Nugs.net allows you to stream live concert audio and video in their app anytime, anywhere. Listen to last night's show with premium sound quality and official soundboard recordings. Watch a stacked archive of past live performances from countless artists and access future subscriber-exclusive live streams. Easily keep track of your tour highlights with shareable playlists and more. Take a scroll through and you'll quickly see why Nugs.net is my favorite app. Link in show notes to start your 7-day free trial. Nugs.net, where live music lives. A member of the DATC Media family. Greetings, fellow music enthusiasts. Welcome to Dropped Among This Crowd podcast. This is your space to explore the role of music in our lives, our love for it, and the sense of community that it creates. Each episode of the show will feature a diverse selection of topics and insightful conversations revolving around three core themes: music, community, and Umphrey's McGee. I'm your host, Sarah J., and I'm thrilled to have you along for the ride. Are you prepared for what comes next? Hey everyone, thank you so much for joining me for this week of Dropped Among This Crowd. I'm your host, Sarah J. I hope you're able to check out the last fresh episode of the show from 2 weeks ago about Umbol 10 voting and featuring an exclusive re-release of my Ross Stewage conversation with Jimmy Knowledge. If you haven't, I highly recommend you check that out anyway. Of course, but especially if you haven't gotten your Umbol votes in yet. Hearing Jimmy and I nerd about Ross Stew last year may help you with voting in that category. Voting is still open, so get on that if you haven't. I will admit, I need to submit my Ross Stew votes as well. So I need to take my own advice here. I need to get on that. But yes, Umbol will be here before you know it. So get on that and give that last fresh episode a listen from 2 weeks ago. Some quick other Umphrey's news. The band announced a slew of summer dates peppered all over, including their first time playing in South Dakota, as well as a handful of co-headlining dates with Blues Traveler. A complete listing of tour dates, umphreys.com, and you'll also find a link in the show notes. Speaking of upcoming dates, if you're going to be in Minneapolis next month for the shows at First Ave, why not take a short 3-minute walk over to Gluck's after night one on Friday, April 12th, for Sarah J. Presents Jake Derringer Project featuring Jake Siniger. That's a mouthful. An official Umphrey's McGee after party. Tickets are now on sale. Link in the show notes or head to DATCMediaCompany.com. Trust me, you are not going to want to miss this. Jake sat in with these guys last February in Madison. I will link the YouTube videos from that night in the show notes for you to check out, and I highly suggest that you take the time to check them out. And in a few weeks, Frank Derringer, guitarist in Jake Derringer Project, is going to be a guest here on the show talking about that after party in Madison, the after party coming up in Minneapolis, recording at Boondock Studio, and a whole bunch more. Very excited to have him on here, so stay tuned for that. In the meantime, get your tickets for Sarah J Presents Jake Derringer Project featuring Jake Sinegar, April 12th, Gluck's Restaurant and Bar. Tickets at datcmediacompany.com. This week on the show, I am very excited to bring you my chat with La Special drummer Rory Dolan. Rory and I were finally able to sit down and chat, and we covered a lot. We took it all the way back to the beginning, growing up in Connecticut and starting to play music with bassist Luke at a young age, and what it's like to already be a band celebrating 20 years of playing together and not even being 35. Rory takes us through his years of his own Umphrey's fandom. I just love this. I was listening back to this, you know, editing it and everything, and it was just so awesome to hear the story again of his own fandom of the whole band and listening to the albums and obviously just being a fan of Chris and everything. And it's just so much fun. We get into when he sat in at Red Rocks back in 2022. He sat in on the jam on Phil's and how that all transpired. And then we get into the opportunity that he got. His fortune favors the bold in this case. It worked out very well for him. And he got to do those two sets on night one and night two in Chicago in Chris's place. And he talks all about that experience, what his homework process was like, not only just making sure that he, you know, had these songs tight, but also physically and mentally, you know, being out there and doing this. La Special also opened those first two nights of the Umphrey's Chicago New Year's run. So he had his own to worry about, and then also play two sets of Umphrey's in front of Chris. So it was so awesome to hear his perspective of the entire thing. He also shares what he was hoping that they would have played and they didn't, his typical pre and post show rituals, and so much more. And my favorite part of this whole episode actually is when Rory shares the hilarious story about the time he found himself on a Primus podcast with Les Claypool, complete with spot on Claypool impression. Like I said, personally, it's a highlight from our entire conversation. Seriously. And I can understand why him and Chris, you know, bond, because Chris also does impersonations and stuff like that. But this is so good. His Claypool impersonation is so great. We also talk about life, parenthood, self-care. Rory also shares what's on the calendar for La Special coming up, including their new mashup EP coming at the end of April. This was so much fun. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much to Rory for taking the time out of your super busy schedule. It just feels like La Special is always somewhere playing a show, and so I greatly appreciate the fact that you took an hour to sit and chat with me. Finally, we've been talking about doing this for a little bit, so it was cool that we were finally able to make it happen. So I really appreciate it, and I know everybody is going to really love this conversation. It was just so much fun, so thank you again so much to Rory. I super appreciate it.
In a very cool new addition to the Much Obliged podcast, the Yellow Balloon Experience, we now have merch. So check out www.yujam.com and click on the Community Impact tab. We've got a Much Obliged shirt and a Much Obliged Podcast, the Yellow Balloon Experience shirt. If you get the plain Much Obliged shirt, the money from that goes to the table, and that helps us buy more stickers and candy for shows. If you buy the podcast shirt, that helps us run this podcast. Can't wait to see you at a show in one of these shirts.
Without further ado, here's my conversation with the special drummer, Rory Dolan. And if you haven't already given the special's latest release, Odd Times, a spin, make sure you do. Available everywhere. Well, I'm super excited. I have so many, so many things.
Oh man, what's going on there?
That I would love to talk to you about. Yeah. But first of all, I think it's funny. Actually, I have to read my buddy Jimmy. We call him Jimmy Knowledge. That's his radio name. And he has a show on my podcast network. And I was like, I'm jumping on with Rory. I'm so excited. And he writes, "Hi, Rory, you were fucking amazing that weekend," referring to New Year's weekend. So I was like, I'm going to read that to him on the air.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
So we are huge, huge fans. So that's why it was not hard for me to find things that I want to talk to you about.
Sure.
Another funny thing, actually, I love coincidences. And I think you are too. I see that a lot. And I was like, kind of, you know, going through your Instagram posts and stuff. And I just love that kind of stuff. And actually, my buddy, Chris, lives in Seattle. And he is at Umphrey's tonight. And he was like, oh, last year I was at Umphrey's and Rory was backstage. And he's like, I got some video because he was doing like street team for the media company. And he actually sent me a video of you two. And I'm like, that's funny. I'm talking to Rory today for the show. And it was just this really funny, like, you know, kind of coincidental thing. Yeah. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's funny you even mentioned that, because obviously they were just, I think, Portland yesterday or whatever at the Crystal Ballroom, and that was the show that we saw. We had like a day off on tour last February. I think it was slightly before March, but in any event, we were there, and yeah, it just dawned on me when I saw that they were playing there just this week. I'm like, wow, it's been a year already. Time just has a way of going by real quick.
It's, and I think, I don't know what it is, if, you know, I've always heard that, you know, sentiment, as you get older, time goes by faster. And so maybe it's a little bit of that, but I don't know. It just seems like things are just moving so quickly now that it's hard to grasp that things like that were, you know, only a year ago. So much happens in such a short amount of time now.
Yeah, maybe cliche, but I definitely feel that sentiment 100%. It seems like every year just goes by quicker and quicker. That's the thing about getting old, I suppose, unfortunately.
But, well, and I'm sure for you, who is just constantly, constantly on the move now. I mean, just in, what is it, the end of March, you guys were on Jam Cruise, you guys were in Costa Rica, you guys were in the Pacific Northwest, you guys were in Denver. Yeah. I was like trying to scroll through and see, and it's just like, wow, you guys are just all over in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, a lot. I mean, tomorrow I'm leaving for Florida, driving our van down there, and we're doing some shows with Otet down in Florida, and it's like 7 shows, so there's 4 in Florida, and then a couple on the way back up. And then I was looking at my calendar, like, when am I even going to be back? And then I'm looking at when I'm going to be back, and I'm like, oh, and then I have to go to Florida later in that week just for one festival play. I'm just like, it's insane. Just never end. But then there is some time off. That's whatever. It could always be worse, but
for sure. But it's a good thing. It's as I tell people when they're like, oh, how's things? And I'm like, I'm busy, but it's a good busy. It's things that I've wanted into my life. And so that's why I try to kind of reframe it a little as like, yes, some days are a little chaotic, but when I look at it, it's because my days are filled with things that I once wished for, that I, you know, that I wanted. And that was something that I loved about the post that I don't know if it was you had made it or if it was like a special like group post where you guys were talking about Costa Rica and you guys shared this story of the first time in like 2012 and it was your first time there and like now you guys were there and closing out Thursday night of the festival and so kind of talk about that for a second.
That was Luke, our bass player, that made that post, and he's away with words. He's a great writer, and so he was kind of just reflecting on that. And I mean, it is kind of wild, especially for me in a different respect, because I have a 12-year-old son who was literally, I was finding out that I was going to be a father right before we took that initial trip 12 years ago. So that was like a very pivotal, intense time in my life. And then, to the what we were saying before about time just going by, it's insane to me that now, 12 years later, here we are again going to Costa Rica, and so much has happened that time, and it also seems just like a blip. It's pretty wild. So it, makes you think, makes you grateful for all the hard times along the way and all the triumphs and things. And happy with where we're at and where we've come and hopefully where we're going. But yeah, it's just kind of a trip. I would say that coming back to that festival 12 years later, the festival itself has grown a lot, and obviously we've grown as in our careers and as people and yada yada. So it was an interesting place to be back at 2 years later, doing the same thing that we've been doing, but hopefully doing it a little bit better.
Definitely, definitely. I love that kind of stuff. And I have a lot of those moments, especially with Umphrey shows, just because that's such a big part of my life. Even before this is what I did for my job. And, so that happens a lot. Like it shows and I'll go to like venues or cities and stuff. And it's like, oh my God, the last time I was here, my kids were this age and I was doing whatever. And it's so interesting and neat to also, like, kind of change the narrative because sometimes when you're in those spaces, maybe it wasn't like the best time in your life, or there were other things going on, and now you can come back to this place and you're like, wow, like I got through whatever that was that last time I was here. And so sometimes it can be inspiring in that sense too.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've been for almost 20 years, which is crazy. But it's, when you grow up playing together in grade school and high school, it's, you're kind of forming yourselves as musicians as you go and as people. So it's not like we all met as fully formed, humans, and kind of still working on that.
And there's nothing wrong with that at all. And that, perfectly leads me into where I wanted to go is back to the beginning. Talk a little bit about growing up in Connecticut. Is that where you were born and raised?
Yeah, Luke and I are from, my bass player Luke and I are from a town called Kent. It's a small town in Litchfield County, Connecticut. It's kind of 2 hours north of New York City, 3 hours from Boston. So it's like kind of the middle of the woods, but it's for being the middle of the woods, it's sort of central to a lot of like Northeast hubs. And we go down to the city for shows all the time. We were always going to shows as kids and whatnot. It's a good place to raise a family. It's a good place to, develop a hobby because there's not a whole lot else going on. We did a lot of theater when we were kids, but obviously we started playing music from a young age too. I had a band when I was in like fourth grade, and the story behind this is that Luke, I like arranged this concert in our music room. My music teacher was really cool and like encouraging. In the sense of being like, oh, you have a band? Like, that's cute. Like, do you guys want to do a show? And we'll invite the whole school. I wish I had a picture of it on me, but there is a picture that exists of this. Like, the whole school came into the music room, and we had a show. We played like the song from Cheech and Chong, and like a System of a Down song, and like an original song that we had, which was probably just like an amalgamation of both those things like together. A funny thing,
And
I
such
we had a
age-appropriate music choices, for
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I quickly transitioned from like being, my parents were like not musicians, but huge music fans. And so things I heard around the house were my first exposure to things. And the Beatles were my first obsession as a kid. And then that quickly transitioned around the time I started banging on like a little toy drum set when I was like 7. And like probably 8, 9, 10 was like the nu metal phase, like bands like Korn and Slipknot and I think my fascination with old horror movies kind of met with the sign of the times at that moment, and was into like all those bands. So that was kind of the influence at that point. But this is long-winded, but Luke's tells a story of like seeing my band, and we weren't friends yet, but seeing my band in the music room when I was in fourth grade, he was in fifth grade, and him being like, "We got to start a band." So like his friends at the time, they started a band. He quickly joined my band, and then from then on, we pretty much, we're always in a band together. First one was like I said, Slipknot influenced. I think we called ourselves Maggot Six, which is pretty silly. I had like all these like 5 gallon plastic 5 gallon pails that like Slipknot's got all these percussionists, and so like at the time going to my dad's garage and like spray paint these plastic jugs and bang on them with drumsticks, and my parents were tolerant enough to just let me do that stuff, which is cool. I'm grateful for that. And then it quickly transitioned to like Nirvana cover band that we were in, and then like 2005 when we were in high school is when we got together with John. Luke and John were in a band prior to Le Special. It was called the Noise Boys. It was kind of a like a more of a jam band influenced, like maybe in the sense of like what the hell they really liked at that point that we didn't like. I guess like kind of more Disco Biscuits and like Dave Matthews stuff. But John wanted to play kind of. John was a drummer. John plays everything. He's super talented and could do any instrument in any band. But at the time, he was a drummer in that band. And when that band disbanded, the three of us got together as kind of a actually replacing that band in a battle of the bands because they had disbanded right before, and we took their place and we won. And that was kind of the beginning of Le Special in 2005. So
Very cool.
ever since then, we've somehow been able to stay together.
I love that. I love that longevity even from childhood and just knowing that this is what we're doing, guys.
It's pretty wild. We were like, our 20th anniversary is coming up like next year or whatever. I'm like, wow, it does kind of make you feel old, but
And how old you got it? I'm assuming you're like my age. I'll be 40 in August, so
I'm 34, so I'll be 35 in July. But yeah.
yeah, so for your band to have a 20th anniversary
I
and
know. It's wild.
yeah.
It's definitely wild.
So you mentioned the Beatles, but what were some other musical influences from your parents, and what were the musical influences so young that made you interested in drumming?
Beatles were definitely some of the first, and the stuff I would hear around the house is music that I like now, but I don't necessarily put it on. I mean, I have a deep appreciation for all sorts of stuff, and even if I have to learn like a set of covers for a wedding or some sort of more kind of general business gig, like I always find something to like about it. But the music that my parents played around the house, I don't know if it's like when you're that age, if you kind of like not rebel against it, but like look, like purposely look elsewhere. And actually, as I'm saying this, now I'm realizing that some of the other influence would have been from like my older sisters. I had a sister who was three older sisters, and my sister that was closest to me was, she listened to a lot of like, it was like kind of MTV era at that point, like, but more like, I guess more hip hop and more rap, and her boyfriend at the time would be like kind of like driving me to basketball practice playing like super loud like subwoofer music in his car and stuff. And so that stuff was definitely an influence at the time. But then I kind of did, I think, veer off into my own realm of like wanting to listen to this weird music by these people that wore masks, like bands like Slipknot. And then that band, or like those types of bands, kind of steered me in a certain direction of being like, okay, well, this stuff's good, it's fine, but like what else is there? And kind of heavier music like from those types of bands went to stuff like Tool or like King Crimson or Rush. And I guess I was always kind of interested in music that was, I don't know, challenging, progressive, or like kind of demanded a little bit more of the listener or the participant, you know?
That's me. That's exactly how I am too. I'm like, you do realize, like, and then I'll say, oh, you do realize they're repeating whatever over and over again monotonously. And somebody will be like, really? I'm like, listen, though. And I'm like, no, something else, please.
But and then this the shirt that I have on, this is a huge, like, at that point too, kind of jumping off point from heavier music, and then music that was kind of incorporating a bunch of different elements. And I guess, like, once I got into, like, when we got into high school, and I wanted to, I guess I kind of decided that I really wanted to be like a player's player. Like, I really wanted to, like, get really, like, try to improve and excel at my instrument, and kind of, like, really make, just, like, be as good as I could be, and always be improving, was when it kind of, like, stemmed off into, like, oh, if you want to study music, you should check out all of these other types of music, like jazz and, like, different world musics. And decided that I wanted to, if I was going to go to college, I would go for music, which, I have mixed feelings on that, and what I would tell like a kid that was my age then about, like, going to an expensive music school. But that's a different discussion. And but yeah, the kind of my world kind of opened up a lot when we got into high school and got together. And also because of, when your friends are listening to different stuff and you check it out and you trade CDs, you burn each other's CDs, that kind of thing. I remember getting, like, on AOL Instant Messenger, like, talking to John and him, like, sending me, like, Fela Kuti or, like, something over AOL, and it was, like, dial up. So, like, he would leave it on, like, overnight, and he would get it, like, the next day. But yeah,
You'd have to, like, check it before school and it wouldn't be done, and you'd be like worrying about it all day.
Or it would, like, disconnect, and, like, you'd lose it, and, like, yeah, we've come a long way.
Oh, yeah. That's fantastic. I love that. So, you basically your whole life were a drummer, but if you weren't doing that, what legitimately do you think you'd be doing?
The only other thing that I would have maybe pursued if this wasn't a viable option or whatever, would be, like, maybe being a teacher. I mean, I'm a teacher in the sense that I teach music lessons, teach drum lessons. But I was always into, like, English and writing and stuff like that. So I think if I were to have pursued anything else, it might have been something like that. Although I feel like teachers are underpaid and underappreciated, so I don't know if that would have been the best move. And actually, and aside from that, and also something that is kind of probably taken for granted in the realm that it's in, is, like, working in, like, food. Like, I love, like, the idea of, like, kind of working in a kitchen and crafting things, and the way you put things together actually has a lot of parallels to music and things like that. So I don't know, maybe either one of those things, but it's hard to say. And I guess if there was another thing, it would have been acting. But again, like, all these things would have had to be, like, pretty much decided, like, when I decided that I wanted to pursue music and have been working on it the whole time. And they're all there. I guess acting in particular is really, probably really hard to get into,
Yeah, I love how there is still like a interesting connection that it's still like it all makes sense that you would pick kind of all these other questions as well. So I love that. I love that. So we talked a little bit in the beginning about all of the places that you have been just this year with Little Special, and trying to research and just kind of map out all of the places that you guys have been. It's been a lot. But what has been like one of your favorite moments with the guys, maybe a moment on stage, or maybe, I don't know, something, just a favorite moment aside from what we talked about at the beginning of the show.
Let me think. Specifically with the special, I mean, let's think. I'm trying to think of, like, pivotal, like, gigs. Like, the Mission Ballroom show that we just played was really special, but for other reasons that have nothing to do with the band or the show or anything, I had, like, a really stressful day, so it's, like, hard for me to process. My sampler, like, broke, or didn't break, but, like, long story short, was not functioning the way it should have been, and I had to, like, spend the whole day rebuilding every sound with help from our buddy Jeremy Dietz. Shout out Adam Deitch's drum tech, Jeremy. He saved my ass, because I actually asked him to come to the show. I didn't really anticipate having that kind of day, And I'm glad that I called him before I knew I was going to have that kind of day, because it would have just been impossible for me to have functioned without it. But the point being is that that was really fun. But if I had to think of something else that was really fun, we've had a lot of cool moments with people like Mike Dillon, who's our buddy and bandmate. We have a band called Fucking A, so it's not actually FUCK, but FACKN, like Fucking A. That's our band with Mike Dillon. It was kind of born out of me subbing for one of his drummers a couple years ago, and then I played in Punkadelic with him and Brian Haas a bunch when Nikki Glaspie can't make the gig. He has a bunch of different drummers, depending on who's available and what's happening. But we've had a lot of cool moments with him, and it's special to, also kind of like playing with the dudes in Umphrey's, have these people that you've looked up to for years and admired, and then they're kind of like, I wouldn't say equals, but you're on the same stage, sharing the same space, and making music together, you know?
For sure. For sure. I have to mention the cover that you guys did with Kanika,
Oh,
the Tool
yeah.
cover, which you guys cover Tool so well that actually the first time I ever heard you guys, I actually thought it was Tool. So, and I'm like, Tool got new music? And I actually like Shazammed. I think I was at Sacred Rose Festival. And you guys were like the house music before something was coming on, and I was sitting there and I like Shazammed it because I'm like, no. And I looked at it, I'm like, really? So I was just like blown away. So,
Cool.
anyways, you guys cover that just well, anyways. But
Thank
Kanika,
you.
who is a
Yeah, she's
goddess,
awesome.
she is just amazing. Yeah, so I just kind of wanted to shout that out. I was like, however I can fit this in there, we need to give that a few moments because it's badass and she's amazing. And anytime
Oh,
I can
yeah.
talk about her on my show, I will do it.
Yeah, she's great, and I'm super down anytime anyone wants to sing Tool, because that means I don't have to do it. Like, we've done that song before. And it's funny because Chris has done this too, where he's sang 46 and 2 and played the drums, and he actually has done it with us. We played some shows with Kick the Cat a couple years ago, and he actually did 46 and 2 with us. He did the vocals, and I, just had to play the drums, which is the way it should be. And we were kind of commiserating over the fact that, like, it's just not a reasonable expectation to have to do Danny Carey drum part and then also to sing like Maynard. So I'm happy anytime anyone wants to sing Tool, so I don't have to do it.
How are your overall views on vocals? And I will admit, I don't know a shit ton about the dynamic and how it works with who sings what in the special. I don't know your music that well yet. So how are your feelings overall with vocals and drumming at the same time?
I think I, for some reason, just have had like a natural knack or like coordination, like advantage, just being able to do it a lot of the time. Like, 'cause whenever we do Primus songs, I'll sing those and play them, and maybe that has to do with knowing the music so well that you're not thinking about like putting these two things together. That being said, any melodic or like really like admirable vocal duties are going to John in our band, because I'm, as they say, like I think I'm a good, I think it kind of maybe comes from acting, like doing impersonations or doing voices and almost like character voices, rather than like singing super like just well and like, in a beautiful kind of way, I'm not really that guy. I mean, maybe I could be in the car, but then you get a microphone in front of my face, and it's not quite the same. So that being
Well, all
said,
those people looking at you, it's much different than when you're just raging out in your car by yourself.
yeah, exactly. So, and singing, I mean, it's probably there's got to be one of the harder things to do, and to do consistently, and to do with confidence, and it's hard. So hats off to all the good singers out there, and we've got a really good one in our band. So shout out John.
You mentioned working with a bunch of different people sharing the stage. What is one of the most valuable pieces of information you've gotten about being in the music industry?
Well, Yeah, actually, I'm glad that I was able to think of this quickly because it's good. I think it's a good answer. I guess just not try not to be too hard on yourself and try to give yourself some grace because that's something that's taken me a long time. I'm still learning it. Taken me a long time to realize because I typically am really hypercritical of myself and self-critical. And you don't really get anywhere by beating yourself up. Although I think that having kind of a sharp edge to your kind of level of what you hold yourself to is good, and I think that actually over time probably has made me better. Because actually I would talk about this a lot, or I feel like I've talked about it a lot lately with different people, like raising your wherever your like lowest performance level is, trying to get that, like even when you have a bad show or a bad day or whatever the hell it is, getting that to the point where it's still 99% better than everything else. Like it's still really good. So like even on a shit day, you're still like an A minus or whatever. I think that's important. And I think maybe that the way to get there is to be really kind of just hard on yourself, but like, this doesn't sound good. So, but yeah, I mean, honestly, the guys in Humphreys Bayless in particular, would be like, I would be like kind of like apologizing for something that I perceived as like an error or something. It's like, dude, we're not still talking about this. Like, what are you talking about? Like, it was great. Like, why are we talking about this? And I've heard this said like before by other people too, like the drummer Josh Freese, who plays with Sting. He's in Foo Fighters now. He took over for Taylor when Taylor passed. He's in a Perfect Circle. He's played for Nine Inch Nails, and he's talking about playing with Sting, and in a similar sense, like being like, oh, like getting off stage and be like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like I was supposed to go to the cross stick pattern, like in that one pre-chorus or whatever. And Sting will be like taking out his in-ears, be like, what are you talking about? Like, why, we're not still talking about this. Let's go get dinner. Like, doesn't matter, you know? But, you know, I guess there's a fine line. You don't want to just be like, oh, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's bullshit. Like, I don't care. So there's a fine line. But I think not being too hard on yourself to the point where you're gonna just run yourself down and feel like shit about it. There's a fine line.
Definitely, definitely. It's important to hold yourself to a certain expectation, but
Yeah.
definitely. I love that. So you kind of touched on this also a little bit, and I love how you're kind of like peppering in what I want to come back to. Your other musical projects. You mentioned one, but I did see like in your Instagram you had like a couple of them listed. So I would love for you to talk about all of your different musical projects.
I mean, the special is definitely the main one, but then there's a couple other things that are on there. When Luke has a DJ project where I play drums and he DJs, that's called Drunken Doja Monkey. So we've been known to do after parties and things of that sort in that context. And that's really just, I mean, for me, it's just fun and easy because I'm just playing drums to whatever music he plays, and a lot of the time I haven't even heard the music before, and I'm just drumming, I'm just doing the thing that I do. So that's fun and pretty carefree. There's another band on there called The Mates, which is kind of it was sort of just born out of like a year or two ago, getting some pickup gigs like in Bridgeport. We just play some fun covers, and then the other band on there is the same kind of thing that actually was born out of the pandemic when there wasn't a whole hell of a lot going on for a little while, and some friends in my hometown and I just decided to get like, it was like kind of where like the socially distanced gigs were happening, and kind of the, you know, the special did some of them, but there were opportunities coming up, and also just being like, oh, I want to play some Steely Dan with some people. Who wants to play Steely Dan? So those projects are all kind of like that. They're definitely lower stress and more centered around just like doing fun covers and whenever the time allows for that kind of thing, you know.
It's fun. It's fun to have those little side creative outlets to do
Yeah.
random things. And that was one of the many silver linings. You know, we can find a couple few, but that was one of the silver linings of COVID, where all these fun little projects, musical or otherwise, that people, you know, brought to life during that time because there wasn't anything else to do. So it's just fun to see that some of them are still around, you know, like Death Kings for Stasic and stuff like that. It's fun to see
Right.
little things that came together.
Yeah, definitely. For sure.
Now, have you ever done anything with Death Kings? I feel like that would be right up your alley.
You mean like me playing with them?
Yeah.
Not aside from just sitting in like at summer camp, I think a year or two ago, whenever that was, I
Okay.
played some Rage Against the Machine with them. But
Okay.
yeah, I mean, I'd be down anytime that if that call comes or whatever. But yeah, they're great. I think that because yeah, I think the drummer they're using now is a guy that's from Charleston or something.
Yeah,
I'm
because
not super familiar.
Mikey Caruba is from here. I actually went to middle school with Mikey
Oh,
Caruba.
cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Awesome.
It's funny to see him because he is like doing exactly the same thing that he was doing in eighth grade. He was
Yeah.
legitimately playing with everybody that had a band. And he was the drummer that in the talent show, if your talent needed a drummer, like he was the guy who was doing it. So it's like
Oh, yeah.
he was, still doing the same thing. I love it. It's so great. He just knew
Yeah.
right away. I love stuff
Yeah.
like that.
Mikey's great, for
Yeah,
sure.
good people. So we talked a little bit about my kids. You have a son, and you mentioned that he just turned 12. That's
Yeah.
an exciting age for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So talk a little bit, first of all, about your experience being a parent so far, just kind of like your take on the whole thing. It's not for the faint of heart, I say.
Yeah. I think that obviously it's a huge responsibility and undertaking, and I think part of being a good parent is being a good person. So, and there's a lot of, unfortunately, there's a lot of people with, I mean, there's a lot of people that shouldn't have kids, and you see a lot of that. And so I think taking in stock with like, and also having good parents is helpful for this because you have an example of what to do or not do, even if you do have a good parent, you might have been like, well, I didn't like when they did this, whatever, learning from your own experiences. But yeah, I mean, it's not for everybody, and it's definitely a big thing. And it's a little different for us with my son Cole, because he's actually has he's handicapped, so he's a disability, so he's kind of a different just whole his whole situation is just a little bit different. He's got like a rare and sorry if this is like getting too or whatever heavy in that sense, but
No.
a rare like neurological disability, which basically results in his like developmental delays kind of thing. So I mean, just that in itself is something that has been a huge learning experience, and something that makes you really grateful for the things that are good, and like makes you very cognizant of, I mean, maybe just makes you hyper aware of like every step along the way, even that much more.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, and he's got great mom who is, amazing and his caretaker, and does everything that she needs to do to make sure that he has a good and happy, healthy life. So,
Awesome.
but yeah, and it makes you just like, makes you grateful and makes you trying to think about not taking things for granted, which, something as simple as being able to walk, talk, and feed yourself is not always guaranteed. So,
Yeah.
but yeah.
So how, that just kind of magnifies my question even more. I mean, it being a working parent, I work mostly from home and I travel sometimes for shows and events and stuff. But I'm very fortunate in the sense that I work mostly from home. So any parent really tries to juggle, life and work and kids and everybody tries to juggle it, but then being a musician, it's equally as difficult because especially like we've been saying, you are gone all the time, like you said, your calendar. But now even with your son, like talk about how you're able to find that balance and kind of bring it back to what we were saying before, is giving yourself that grace of maybe not being there as much as you would like to be.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is tough. Especially like I was saying earlier, like when I look at my calendar and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm gonna be gone, and then I'm gonna be gone again. And it's like, so just trying to, excuse me, trying to make the most of the time that you have there when you are there. So when you're home, you're home. When you're present and you're when you're home, you're present, and you're not like, you're gonna play that role when you're there rather than
worrying about 1,000 other things that you can't control when you're home. And then when you're out and you're doing your job, then that's like a separate track, you know, and a separate focus. But yeah, it is hard. And it's sometimes it makes you think that, like, you know, you don't want to be spending as much time away. But there's always the juggling act of what do you really need to do, you know, financially and or career wise, and what's really important. But yeah, and then, you know, having an understanding, obviously, with your partner or whoever it may be, that that needs to be kind of really clear. And also, I think it's helpful that I, you know, didn't just start doing all this stuff all of a sudden. Like, I've been doing it for, you know, basically since I was 14, 15 years old, like playing gigs and traveling, and obviously more and more in the last 10 years or so. But it's not like when I had my son, it wasn't like I just all of a sudden was like, okay, now I'm gonna be gone all the time. It was like already kind of an understanding that this is something that I'm doing and I'm gonna continue to do. And, you know, I think as you get older, and I think I've seen this a lot, like even the guys in Humphreys, and a lot of them, most of them, you know, have kids, but not everyone, but either way, they've kind of tapered their, you know, their old frequency of playing, however, 250 shows a year or something ridiculous now, has kind of been funneled down to like kind of quality over quantity. And they've earned that, obviously, through the 25 years of building this thing. But I think that that's something that as you get older and maybe your priorities change, or maybe you just get tired of doing something, that there's always room for adjustment and amending certain things, you know.
For sure.
It's all balance at the end of the day, and you just have to be making a conscious effort to keep things in balance, you know.
It's all about making that conscious effort and conscious decision and just being self-aware. The self-awareness, I tell my therapist, it's a blessing and a curse.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
It really, sometimes you're just like, oh, damn it.
Like ignorance is bliss kind of thing, yeah.
Sometimes you're like, you know what, I just wish I could.
Yeah, just turn off. Yeah, exactly. Sure. Another feeling, for sure.
For sure. For sure. So you talked about, you know, being a good parent, it boils down to being a good person. And for me, that means I'm just really heavy on the self-care, really, really heavy on, you know, making sure I have that time myself and, you know, just kind of get this together. So what does self-care look like for you?
Trying to eat right, trying to sleep enough, trying to have healthy relationships with the people that are important in your life, and trying to, yeah, the self-awareness, you know, just trying to just accept the fact that no one's perfect, and as long as you're trying to, you know, make, even if you were bad one day, and tomorrow's another day, and you can always, like, you know, pick yourself back up and do the right thing, even if you've done something that was fucked up. Yeah. So, but yeah, those big ones, and those are hard enough to maintain on the road, as you may or may not know, like eating right, just getting enough sleep, having good attitude, you know, these are things that it's easy to slip back into, or it's easy to slip into patterns of behavior that maybe you've done before, or even if you haven't, it's easy to get stuck. And so I think, you know, keeping, also being able to communicate effectively and talk about something that's going on, if there is something going on, especially in a band, there's a lot of things that can perhaps be unsaid or untaken care of, swept under the rug. And these things, you know, as you learn, they always will manifest in other ways if you don't address them. And I think that's something we've been really good at over time, and it's probably one of the reasons why we're still together after all this time, is that we've always checked in and, you know, tried to keep the channels of communication clear, and if they're not, or something needs addressing, then it'll be addressed. Yep. You know, yeah. All the big obvious stuff, you know, the self-care stuff, but it's, again, like so many things, easier said than done, you know?
Yeah, definitely. When you have the schedule that you're like in different spaces, different hotel rooms, different countries, it's different time zones. It's difficult, but whatever you can do is important. All right, so let's talk about some Humphreys. So, first of all, let's talk about your Humphreys fandom. What was your level of fandom years ago?
Well, let's see. So right around the time that we started Le Special was the first time I would have heard Humphreys, like 2005, 2006. I remember Anchor, my friend who we were in a band with, my friend Caleb. I remember him having a burned copy of Anchor Drops that was circulating. And it was like just I remember hearing that one in particular, that record, and around the same time that I was like getting really serious about studying music and being, like studying the drums, hearing just, my ears going to the drums first. I liked the music anyway, but like hearing Chris and just being like, I literally remember thinking, how do you get that good? Like how do you get to that level of mastery? And then, I would then get the, it was just kind of serendipitous, like the timing of everything, 'cause then that summer going on vacation with Luke and his family, getting a Modern Drummer magazine with Chris on the cover and reading, basically reading about his path and how he, went to music school, has a master's in jazz studies. And that literally was something that at the time I was like, I want to do that, and I didn't do all those things, but did go to music school. And he was a huge, the band and him in particular, a huge impetus for me being like, how do you get to this level of performance, of, how do you sound like that, essentially? So huge, huge influence, and was huge, like pretty obsessed, like right off the bat with the band. I remember like they had the podcasts that you could download, and I would have like every one of those burned to a CD and like a just like a box of all these. I wish I still had them. Listen to them on the bus and my Discman. We saw them, I think, 2005. So it was right before Safety in Numbers came out in 2006. We saw them at Bonnaroo that year. That would have been my first Humphrey show. They played like a late night set. I think Disco Biscuits were after them, and they were first. And I remember that show was really good. And then that summer we saw them again, Central Park Summer Stage. I used to have all these Lives burned to CDs. That was a really good show. Galactic opened. And then I remember being really upset that we went to McCarran Town Pool to see, it was like the Dumb tour, it was Disco Biscuits and Humphreys. And we were so pissed because we didn't realize that Humphreys was playing first and we were like late. And so we only caught like the end of like Party and Peeps or something. A hugely obsessed Humphreys fan in that era. And then it persisted for a while. I remember, I think the next year, 2007, we took a trip out to summer camp for the first time. And that was when I met Chris, walking down the lane at summer camp. And it's funny because since then we've played it like six times or something, so it's become familiar as just a performer. But at the time, I actually had broken my hand at that point. It was right before I graduated high school. I remember meeting Chris and him being like, "Oh shoot, like you're a drummer, like that sucks." I'm like, "Yeah, I'm like I'm going to Berkeley next year, like." He's like, "Oh, you should study with my friend Mark Walker." And then I did study with him. I told Chris this like a couple months ago when we were hanging out in Brooklyn. And I think I had mentioned it to him before, but whatever, we touched on that. He's like, "Oh, it's so cool that you like, did what I told you to do," kind of thing. But yeah, I remember talking to him there. That was probably the first time that we met. And then, I think as the years went on, it was definitely, maybe a little less super fandom. Got into some other things, and I remember still being pretty heavy into them when Mantis came out, and then maybe after like Death by Stereo, I may have like gone into a different direction or whatever. But it was always a huge goal for us to play with them, and once you started checking some of those boxes, like opening for them, and of course they had us at Red Rocks, which is amazing. And that
I
was the
think that was the
first.
first time I saw you guys. It might have been. I think that was the first time that I
Cool.
actually got to see you guys was Red Rocks. Like I was
That was
super
a
excited.
good first time then.
Yeah, for sure. That was a really, really good first time. Very pleased.
Yeah, and then like my tour manager Chris Bykirk, shout out Chris. He after that show, what did he do? Oh yeah, he came up to me and well, because he had asked Myers if I could sit in with them, which is like an interesting way of doing it. And then after our set, Myers came up to me. He's like, "How do you feel about sitting in?" I'm like, "I feel great." And at the time, I thought he meant to play percussion, but he's like, "No, the drums." I'm like, "Oh shit, awesome!" So yeah, pretty crazy. I did feel pretty confident about like just knowing the music and having known it for so long. You know, it's not like when you try to learn something that you're just hearing for the first time, not having heard it since you were a teenager. It's, our brains get a little bit slower maybe as time goes on. It becomes harder to learn new things. So I think the predisposition that I had with just being kind of soaked and steeped in their music for so long was a huge leg up and advantage for me, because I mean, I know for a fact some of the other sub drummers, like even like for example my friend Mike Greenfield, I was talking to him about from Lotus, talking about this, and he's like, he had never, other than being familiar with the band, he didn't know their music whatsoever and learned literally 50 songs just like right off the bat. And so I think it's just maybe a different thing. And also me being such a fan of Chris, wanting to, even though I was kind of told not to do this by some people, may or may not have been in the band, be like, "Don't try to play like Chris, just do your own thing." I'm like, well, my own thing is wanting to sound like Chris because I love his drumming. So it's like, this is what you're gonna get, you know?
Yeah.
Can't
Well, and I
avoid
think
it.
with your style, you would have, because that's just your style. I mean, but and then you had like Dwayne, where he wouldn't have, because Dwayne, just that's not his style.
Right.
And you know, I think for you, it would have kind of been hard for you not to, because that's just your style.
Of course, yeah, and even beyond thinking about specifically Umphrey's music, like I know that Chris and I have very like similar influences. We like heavier music, we like double bass, it's like a lot of these things just make sense, as to why it was a good thing.
Well, and it makes sense. I said this on my New Year's episode, and I'm sure I said it, you know, talking with friends and everything. That's why it made sense for you to play in Chicago the way that you did. It just, it sounded, you know, again, no offense to any of the other drummers that
Oh
played
no,
at
of
all.
course not, yeah.
It was very cool to, I think I saw six or eight of those shows live, like while Chris was off, you know, including New Year's. I saw a bunch with Dwayne. I listened to all of them. I talked to Mike Greenfield, was on the show. Scotty Swain was on the show. You know,
Cool.
so I've done like, you know, I digested a lot of this. But I think like out of all of them, you're up there with, you know, if we're gonna sound like Umphrey's, I think that you were pretty on par to, you know, if we were going to close our eyes and think of it being them, you know, that would go to you.
Oh, well, cool. Thank you. I appreciate it. And there was an advantage to the fact that I got to choose all my songs, which is cool. Like I knew that when, I mean, it's kind of a funny, can I tell the story of how this kind of came about?
Of course, of course.
So it was a hot August morning or whatever when I woke up to the post saying that Chris is getting shoulder surgery, whatever. And here's the list of the sub drummers. I'm not on that list. I'm not a part of the post. I never heard anything about this. And so I'm looking at my phone, kind of lying in bed, and I'm like, huh. I'm like, damn, I didn't get the call. Shit, what did I do? What did I do wrong? But then I sent just like a funny text to, I guess Stasek and Bayless, just like kind of, I was kind of fucking with them. I was just like, I was like, I didn't realize you needed a drummer that knew all your music. And then from there it snowballed into like, ha ha ha. We actually have some more dates to fill. What's your availability? Gave him my availability. None of that panned out because, there was conflicts, whatever. And then, like a couple weeks later, or maybe not even, Le Special got the offer to open the New Year's shows. And with that offer came a very vague kind of request and/or inquiry about, like, oh, can you? They called it pinch drumming. Could you pinch drum? Because they didn't know if Chris was going to be ready at that point, what level of ready he was going to be, or any of that. But then, that's kind of how it all happened. And then eventually, even further after that, kind of got confirmed, okay, you're playing this set on this night, that set on that night. And then from there, I was like, okay, well, they have all these drummers to curate set lists for, and they've got drummers that have learned these songs, they've played them before, whatever. I know so much of their music that I'm gonna give Bayless a list of, like, 40 potential songs that I could play. Whether or not I was like could have played them that day or whatever, I had some idea about them. And I think that was helpful because a lot of this stuff was older, and a lot of that stuff was a little bit leaning more into the heavier proggier Umphreys realm. I think that was helpful for them because it was also obviously songs that they all were good on, but like songs that maybe the other sub drummers hadn't played yet or had played seldom. So it all kind of worked out. And yeah, I got to choose, like, be like, oh, I've always wanted to play this song, and never did I think I would be playing this song with that, one of my favorite bands. But it kind of was, it was a fun way to go about it because, like, got to play a bunch of my favorite Umphrey songs with Umphreys. Pretty cool.
What did your homework process look like?
Well, the special, we had just done a tour in the fall. We just put out an album, Odd Times, in the fall, so we had a big tour behind that. And I had known my list prior to that tour and had been doing a lot of listening. I kind of, even though I knew like versions of all these songs, I decided I actually borrowed Mike Greenfield's Nugs account so I could listen. It's funny. Thanks, Greeny. Like, basically get a bunch of different versions of said song. So, like, a bunch of versions of 40s Theme, bunch of versions of Bridgeless, whatever the songs were, and cross-reference these different interpretations. And something that was a challenge and also kind of liberating about this is the type of drummer that Chris is. I mean, at heart, he's a master improviser and a jazz drummer, and so he'll reinterpret his own drum parts a myriad of ways, given one take to the next. And it's almost like it can almost be a little confusing sometimes because you're like, this is that you're playing this song a completely different way than you did before. And like his one interpretation could be, you're kind of like thinking that's the drum part for the song, and it is in one sense, but then it's totally like he could just do anything else and it works beautifully, I think. That's one of the things I love about his playing. But it was something that was also like, and some kind of heeding some of the advice of other people, like, well, don't try to make it as crazy as Chris because, like, you won't be able to do it. So you kind of had to meet somewhere in the middle and maybe not go full Myers because he's the only one that can do that.
Never
Isaac
go
from
full Myers.
like Isaac from Talk calls him the Terminator. He really is just,
Yeah.
he's kind of not human in some senses with his drumming. Amazing. But so my process was doing a lot of listening, and then when I finally had, like, I had maybe 2.5 weeks before New Year's when we'd gotten off our tour, maybe the first week of December or the second week or whatever. And I teach at a school where I have a room, drum sets in there, and I was just like, okay, well, from now until New Year's, I'm going there every day. I'm gonna play through every song. I had 20 songs, I think, in total, and we ended up playing like 15 of them because we cut a couple. I was pissed I didn't get to play, not pissed, but I was like, White Man's Moccasins. I spent a bunch of time on White Man's Moccasins, and we didn't play that. What else did we not play? I'm drawing a blank, but either way, I went to the practice room every day without fail and spent, I was probably like, at the beginning, it was like probably 4 hours a day just going through every song, playing it with the recording, without the recording, hearing different versions, playing to different versions. And yeah, I pretty much just did that every day up until New Year's, even to the point where the morning I was leaving for Chicago, I had to go out a day early to rehearse with the guys. And, even that morning, I woke up at like, 5:30 in the morning to go get like one more practice session in, because it was the kind of thing where, I was kind of losing sleep over it in a good way. And like, if I hadn't been doing that, there would have maybe been something wrong. Like, you'd have to check my pulse. But I just needed to like prepare, and really prove to myself that I was worthy of the job and know that I did absolutely everything I could to prepare for this. Because there's nothing worse than getting on stage and being like, oh, I could have done this, I could have done that to prepare better. And usually when you put in that kind of hard work, usually you get a break and you get a little bit of slack. And but then when you don't prepare and you under prepare, then you're going to get screwed and you're going to need to whatever. Geddy Lee had a good quote about this in the, I'm a big Rush fan, and one of their documentaries, they're preparing for their last tour, the R40 tour, and he's on his way to rehearsal, and the interviewer is asking him, how is it going, learning all these songs you haven't played in years? He's like, it's like 80% there. And he's talking about this concept of getting yourself to the point where you're so, it's so ingrained, you're so practiced, so well prepared, that it's automatic, obviously muscle memory. But then if you get thrown a curveball in any other sense, like say your equipment stops working or someone throws something at you or any other external influence, you're able to let it roll off your back because you're so ingrained and you're so just like on top of your shit. Whereas if you're not prepared in that sense, any little thing could cause a train wreck, you know?
That's a really interesting stance, quote, whatever you want to kind of label it, like even in life too.
Yeah.
It really kind of is, you know, when you're going along with life, and if it's something, you know, that's really, I mean, of course it came from Geddy Lee, so I'm not surprised, but it's like profound and like take, you know, I'm trying to like absorb this right now. It's like your grandfather just said something super inspirational, you know?
Yeah.
Like, of course that's where it came from.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So, you know, I think that was sort of the approach that I took. I just wanted to be really, you know, really prepared. And I think it ended up paying off at the end of the day. So, and like I said,
very obvious. It was very obvious that you did your homework.
Mm.
It really, really was.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was, I'm glad it all went well. And yeah, it's like, it's rare for me to, like I said before, being like self-critical and maybe too hard on myself sometimes. And it's nice to like look at something and be like, yep, yeah, I'm like proud of like the job that was done, and not have any kind of misgivings or I wish I had done this, I wish I had done that. So it's good. Super, super happy with it. Super grateful for the opportunity, you know?
I'm sure. Yeah. What did like the mental and physical preparation look like? Because you're playing your opening both of those nights with La Special, and the 29th, you played one set the 29th and one set the 30th, right? I had my notes, and then I think that one's upstairs. Yeah. Cause then Portnoy, I was going to talk to you and ask you about like being there when Portnoy was there, if you are a progressive, you know, hard music guy.
Yeah.
Are you a Dream Theater fan?
So it's interesting. I'm not necessarily a Dream Theater fan. He was super nice, super sweet guy. And actually, I think that me not being a huge Dream Theater fan actually helped that situation, because like I was already enamored and like starstruck with Myers because he's like my buddy. But like I was more nervous about filling in for Chris than I was about Mike Portnoy being there. And I mean that in the most respectful way. If it was like, you know, he was super chill. And like, you know, of course, the you know, I was like nervous kind of going into it, and then that kind of washed away. But like the day that we were rehearsing, we're in the practice room downstairs at the Riv, and playing through the stuff with the guys. And we took pause or whatever, took a break. And I remember asking Joel, like, is Chris going to be here today? And then like 2 minutes later, I hear Chris's voice in the hallway. And so then he's kind of there and kind of like, you know, in on the practice session, which made me a little nervous at first, and then didn't really affected me too much after that. But then also to that point, like later on when we actually sound checked upstairs, Portnoy and Myers are just like literally standing like right behind me as I'm playing. We're playing like Junk, and they're like just right next to the drum riser. I'm like, oh yeah, no pressure. Thanks guys. You know, no worries.
But, just only shitting my pants a little bit right now, you know?
Yeah. I'm like,
so what did it feel like then, like Chris is watching, you know, the first two nights and everything? I mean, it was probably, I'm sure it was pretty cool, but you know,
yeah,
can it make you a little nervous?
Yeah, definitely made me a little nervous. I was probably more nervous when he was like, we were in the practice room and we're playing, and he comes in and starts changing the front bass drum head on the practice kit, and I'm like, oh my god, his head's right under the practice cymbal, and Bayless kind of looking at me, and I'm like, I'm not hitting that cymbal. His head's right underneath it. You know, I can't hit that cymbal anymore. And then he comes over and he sits right next to the hi-hat. And I'm like, just, we're playing through these songs. And he's literally, there's a picture of it on my Instagram. of like me like laughing, and he's kind of laughing, and Joel took the picture. But it's like, you know, it's kind of, you can't write this shit. It was pretty funny. But yeah, he's super sweet to me, and super gracious, and you know, he had some really kind things to say after those sets, which is cool. And yeah, you know, I wanted to do a good job and make him proud, so it was good. Yeah, the nervousness kind of washed away, even though it was definitely present. And then to your question about the physicality of doing both sets, that was something that was definitely, I was glad that I had prepared and practiced so much leading up to those shows, and I felt like kind of well oiled for that task. But I will say that playing the hour set with the special both nights, and then playing with Umphreys for like an hour and 20 minutes or whatever it was, definitely took its toll, a little bit. Like, especially the first night, I remember during my favorite part of Jajunk, like having a bit of a cramp in my forearm, and you know, just from like overuse, you know, and like, and of course, I'm like, of course, it's during the end of, you know, Jajunk Part Two, where I'm like, I want to nail this, and I can hear it when I listen to the recording. It kind of drives me insane. But save for that, it all went pretty smoothly. But yeah, I mean, the whole playing two sets or playing that much music in one night, I don't know how the hell Chris does what he does, because you know, two sets a night for however many nights, and the way that he plays, and it's a, you're an athlete, you know, you have to look at it like that, especially drummers. And it's no small task.
Definitely not. What is your pre and post show like typically your kind of like your prep before and after the show?
Well, just spend some time on a practice pad, warming up my hands, and trying to pre-hydrate, because a lot of the time you're not going to have too much time to like be sipping your water in between. That was the lesson learned the first night, like get some more potassium and think electrolytes for night two, so that worked out. And then
This is
post,
valuable advice even for the fans. You know,
yeah,
we're out
totally.
there and it is no joke riding the rail.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you got to stay hydrated. But a post show, I mean, you know, not so, and I don't have too much of a routine post show other than like, you know,
Did
trying
you
to
do
catch.
like the whole ice up thing a lot
Well,
of
no,
drummers do?
I did actually do that, as Chris had advised me to after that first night. We talked about, like, I had explained to him that I cramped up or whatever, and he's like, oh, you gotta ice. And actually that night when I went back to the hotel, we iced. And took some like, you know, anti-inflammatory, like ibuprofen or something. And he's like, yeah, that's my routine. He had some sort of like, it almost looked like a vest situation that he had, like this massage thing. I've seen he's used that, but he ices, I think, after every show. And that's huge, you know. And it's something that I definitely think as time goes on, we'll probably want to do more and more of, just because you gotta tend to take care of your machine, as it were, you
For sure, for a lot of reasons. What is your biggest takeaway from
know?
like that whole experience of doing this these two nights with Umphreys and also it's you know it's their New Year's festivity, so it's a special time for them in Chicago and all of that, and being able to fill in for Chris. So what is your biggest takeaway from that experience?
I get cheesy, but dreams do come true.
I love that.
You
I'm all
know,
about that stuff.
I mean, it is kind of wild. I definitely thought about it before it happened, and thought about it more after it went well, that it never would have occurred to me as a, you know, 15-year-old listening to a burned copy of Anchor Drops that I would someday be drumming for this band, and have the opportunity and the privilege to do that. So I'm super grateful. Super grateful to their whole organization. They're all stand-up guys. Great, the band, the crew, everybody treated me so well. They're so sweet, and you know, some of the hardest working people I've ever met. Super grateful to, you know, for the whole experience. And yeah, and I think maybe another thing to comment on is that, like, I often, when I would practice as a teenager, whether it was Umphreys or whether it was another band, I'd make, like, I remember having these pieces of paper. I would make fake set lists from like just any number of bands, and write a set list and play the set list and prepare it. Like in my mind, I was like, okay, as if I'm subbing, as if I'm playing in this band, I'm practicing like that. So I guess you just never know what could happen. And if you're, if you're prepared enough to
You
do.
manifested it. I love it so much.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I don't know. If you're prepared enough to do something, then and you get asked, I mean, some people might have said no or something, you know. But if you are really confident, and I was confident, and even just the fact that like it might seem like I'm a little like it's almost like I don't know. I even know what I'm trying to say there, other than like if I hadn't sent that text, kind of like you know, giving them a little prod, like you know, they didn't really ask me initially. But if I hadn't been confident enough to be like, hey, listen, like, what the hell? I know all your music, then might not have ever happened. And if I didn't know the music to begin with, you know, so you just never know. So you gotta be bold and you know, stay hydrated and listen to your Umphrey's podcasts, you
I love it. I love it. So, what is another band that I guess is kind of maybe would be a two-part or maybe it's the same answer? So, what is another band that you and after our conversation, I think I might know the answer to this. So, what is another band that you would A, love to have the same opportunity as Umphrey's, and B, again, might be the same answer. You would have that same level of confidence that you would be able to do what you did with Umphrey's.
They're on my shirt, this band.
Thought so.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, legitimately. And I was on a, it's funny, I was on a podcast with Les Claypool once, and like it was
That's
this
pretty fucking rad.
it's a crazy story that I'll try to like just trunk like shrink down. I was on this, there's a podcast called Primus Tracks, and they literally, it's Josh Bald, and then Frankie's in Mexico City. Josh is out on the West Coast, and they're amazing. All three special members have been on it a bunch. I've been on it maybe like I don't know 7, 8 times at this point. They go through every song on Primus's their whole discography, so they're up to like they just did Oysterhead, and they do Claypool side projects too, where they analyze every track, every album, all that stuff. So if you're a Primus fan, you don't know about Primus Tracks, you got to check that out. But the story is that I was on this for the first time, talking about a Primus song, demonstrating the drum part, that kind of thing. We're on this Zoom call with one of the people that was a subject of the song, this guy Adam Gates, who used to do a bunch of visuals for Primus, and he's a character in their universe. And Primus's drum tech is on there, and he's aware of the special and that we just did Frizzle Fry in its entirety, and this has gone off really well in the Primus camp, essentially. And then all of a sudden he's like, the guy's telling the story about the song, and then he's like, and you know, there was someone else in the car at the time, and he's gonna hop on and tell you his take of the story. And then all of a sudden, Claypool pops up in the bottom right-hand corner of the screen. He's got like a bandana over his face. This is like 2020 or 2021 or whatever. And then he's just like, he's all of a sudden in the Zoom call, and I'm just like, fucking, like, what the hell? And they were all in on it. They knew this was gonna happen. They didn't tell me, obviously, because I would have probably not gotten on the call. But yeah, and then you know, and he's like, "What the hell are you guys doing here? Like, what is this?" He had no idea what the podcast was. He just literally, his friend was like, "Can you hop on the Zoom with these guys or whatever?" He didn't know what the hell it's for. And you know, he straight up like he's going through the people in the chat, and he's like, "Who's this guy? Like, what's your deal?" The drummer dude, and I'm like, "Hi, Mr. Claypool, sir." And he's like, "Play your best beat." And I'm like, all right, Les Claypool, sure, I'll play a drum beat for you. And I played something. He's like, that's a pretty good beat. And then, like, as the podcast progressed, like, we were on it for probably 2 hours talking about this song, me playing the drum part. And then they'd be talking about some other song, and Les would be like, I don't remember how that one goes. And then they're like, Rory, how does it go? And I just like play this. He was like quizzing me on drum part. It's insane. It's out there to hear. Well, my whole point with this story is that at one
That's
point
amazing.
he said the drum tech guy was like, oh, Les, this guy's band just did like Frizzle Fry, and this guy sang your parts and played Tim's parts at the same time. And Les is like, well, don't tell Lur. Lur's the guitar player. He's like, don't tell Lur, he'll kick me out of this shit. I'm like, no, he won't. Just so funny. Yeah,
That's
that's a
amazing. And I love your little like Les Claypool Impersonation, and I love how you like went in and out of it like just so seamlessly. That
Yeah, something I've done once or twice,
cool. I love that. That's great. That's great. So what's next for you in the special?
Well, we have these shows we're doing in Florida with the Motet this coming week. We're going to be in Pensacola, St. Petersburg, a couple other things that I'm really bad with this type of information. But there's four shows in Florida, and then there's a couple shows on the way back up the coast. One with Doom Flamingo in Charleston, which we're stoked about.
Fuck yeah.
And then we have Resonate Festival in Florida. That's the first week of April. And then some more shows with the Motet in the Northeast, like Brooklyn Bowl in Brooklyn and the Brooklyn Bowl Philly. There's a New Jersey show and another one that I'm blanking on. And then we're doing Soulshine, which formerly known as the artist formerly known as Summer Camp. And so that should be fun. Hopefully we'll do some stuff with the Umphreys guys there, I hope. And what else? Yeah, the summer's kind of just peppered with festival plays. We don't typically do like a lot of touring or club dates in the summer. We tend to stack those heavy in the winter, and then the fall we tend to do like longer runs. So just some good festivals that we're doing. And we're gonna be putting out an EP at the end of April that's kind of almost Umphrey's adjacent in the sense that it's our mashup EP. So we kind of, they did the Zonkey thing, and this is not like a deliberate attempt to imitate or anything, like it's just something that was happening. We've got like these things that we do, like we do Enter Sandstorm, which is Metallica and Darude mashup, and then we do like this thing's called Raining Blind Puppies, which is like Slayer, Korn, and Primus. So we're putting out this 4-track EP that's kind of, it's all those songs. It's just like 4 tracks, and we have a song that's based off the T-Mobile ringtone, which is exactly how it sounds. So that'll be coming out shortly. It's being mixed right now by the same guy that did our Odd Times record, Dave Sanchez, who's in the band Havoc. They're an amazing metal band.
Fantastic record.
Yeah, oh, thank
Fantastic
you.
record. And I'm a music snob. We kind of touched on that with needing your music to pack some balls to it. And I'm a music snob, so
Hell yeah.
very well
Well,
done.
thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, we're happy with it. But yeah, those are kind of some of the things that are coming up. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Nice, nice. All right. Well, I like to end it off with some quick fire questions, rapid fire questions, however you want to call
Sure.
them. So, first one, album that changed your life.
Primus, suck on this.
Okay. Song you wish you wrote.
Song I wish I wrote. it's a hard one. Shit, I'm not supposed to think about this too hard.
You can come back to it if you want.
What song I wish I wrote? What did I wish I wrote?
It's like Google search, what is the highest
Yeah,
grossing
right. Yeah, no, exactly.
song of
I wish I wrote Imagine. There you
Oh, that's a great one. That's a good one. Okay. Favorite
Money.
meal?
Favorite meal.
Yeah.
Italian something.
Okay. Favorite movie?
Batman, 1989. Michael Keaton, Jack
Fuck
Nicholson.
yes. Perfect
No, no
answer. I love anything
contest.
Batman. Love
Yeah.
anything Batman. Currently listening to.
Currently listening to. Does it have to be music or can it be? Yeah, no,
No,
it
if
has to be
it's some
music.
if there's like a book that
Unless
you're
I
listening
just.
to that's piquing your interest or an album or a podcast, anything, what are you listening
I do a
to?
lot of podcasts, but on the way here, I was listening to Rubble Bucket.
Nice.
Great band. I listen to a lot of podcasts, a lot of drummer podcasts. I was listening to a podcast with this drummer, Andy Newmark, before. Played with like Carly Simon and it's nerdy stuff, but
That's cool. Fuck
yeah.
yeah. Very cool. Very cool.
Carly Simon is You're So Vain. You probably think this song is about you.
Yep.
That's all I know about her. I just learned
That's all I know about her
it
too. And I think like,
today.
didn't she like date James Taylor? And then like people think
Yeah.
that that song was about him, but she
Oh,
says
there
it's
you
not.
go.
But isn't that what the words are about?
Yeah,
So.
that actually that kind of that's totally makes sense based on what I just heard earlier on that podcast. So there you go.
The 70s, anyways, in music is just like my wheelhouse, but like 70s progressive rock is what I was like raised on. And so, like, that is like, if I'm not listening to Humphreys, then you're gonna find me like neck deep in Yes and Genesis. And I think
Sick.
that's my thing. So
Love it. Awesome.
awesome. Well, this was super fun and totally worth the wait.
Hell yeah. Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm glad we finally made it happen. And yeah, I really appreciate your time and your fandom and everything that you've got going on.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate all your support and being awesome and taking the time out of your super busy schedule to sit and talk with me. So
Of
thank you. All
course, my pleasure.
right, well, have a great rest of your night and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Sarah. You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining me for today's episode. Please be sure to leave a review of the show. It would mean so much to me, and it helps get this podcast into the ears of even more fellow music fans. If you're not already following the show on social media, find us on Facebook and Instagram at Dropped Among This Crowd Podcast, or check out DATCmediacompany.com for more. Thank you again. I'll see you around these parts real soon. Mad love.